Can I say the NBA is inebriated?
Sure.
Like, can we say that?
Yeah, you can say
that. Or can we just go ahead and say the NBA was drunk right now?
They're synonyms, Tony. They're synonyms. They mean the exact same thing.
But inebriated is like a more kind word.
You're inebriated right now. All right. Let's just recap what has happened.
No. Can we welcome everybody?
Welcome everybody
to our podcast.
To our podcast.
Our Tribune podcast. And we also want to say welcome, Kyle Goon, to the Utah Jazz Beat.
Exciting to be here, Tony. As you know, we worked together a long time, and it's fun to be working together and to be a part of one of these wicked intros to your podcasts, which have been legendary.
You can tell by the use of the word wicked. Kyle is from Baltimore, Maryland, home of world's most
I was gonna say that
shouter.
You know, wicked is a Boston word. You're starting off on the wrong track, pal.
Yeah, well, Boston making waves in the last day or two.
What a segue, Kyle. All right, so let's just catch up really quick. Boston's traded the number one pick. LeBron's general manager has been fired. Well, let go. No contract extension.
He was fired a week before free agency. Keep going.
In the middle of possibly.
In the middle of possibly trading for Paul George or Jimmy Butler.
Paul George is on the trading block.
Jimmy Butler's on the trading block.
Kevin Love could be gone from Cleveland.
Patrick Beverley is on the trading block.
Oh, that was the next logical step from Kevin Love to Patrick Beverley.
Listen, we're all for segues.
Kristaps Porzingis could be traded.
And Jazz fans are going bonkers on Twitter. What can we trade for? What can we get in?
What can they get in, Tony?
These are the questions that we want to answer on this podcast.
Okay, all right. Let's with all of that said, let's dial it back and let's start with the draft, because what's going
to
happen.
We have to break this up.
Your mock draft, I read it. I have to ask, do you expense the drugs you smoke before you do this thing, or is this out of pocket?
I'm going to say that I did another one last night. Okay, I haven't released that one yet, but what are the questions do you have to my mock draft?
They're just a couple. I mean, one... Well, let's start at the top. We can get into the questions I have in a minute. But you guys have both seen Markelle Fultz play a lot. Kyle covered the Utes last year. Is this your number one pick? I mean, everyone assumes obviously that he's going to Philly. What did you see when you watched him, Washington versus Utah?
I mean, yeah, he's a really skilled player, and actually he only played the Utes one time, but Utah won very convincingly. They played a lot of two-man defense on him, and he still dropped 30 on them. And he just sort of has this effortless way, at least at the college level, of playing the game that he really couldn't be stopped. And even efficiency-wise, I mean, he's usually good for – in the college game, he was good for a 30-point, you know, 8-rebound, 8-assist type night on any given night. I know a lot of people have been talking about how bad Washington was. And they only won 9 games. They were a really bad team. And some people have been kind of identifying that as, okay, well, is this guy a winner? But actually saw a stat recently that Washington has had 7 first-round picks in the last, I think, decade who have not made the NCAA tournament. So it's sort of a weird situation for that specific program, which maybe has underachieved with the talent. Lorenzo Romar just got fired this last year. But Markelle Fultz is a really special player. There's really nothing he can't do. I saw him in some other games last year where he was just phenomenal overtime games. He can make deep shots. He can create. He can basically do it all.
So, Tony, what did you think of that trade then? From Celtics and Philadelphia perspective?
I think that it couldn't have turned out better for Philly. especially when, you know, you realize that they didn't give up two future first-round picks. Instead, they only gave up the one. I think that, you know, I think Danny Ainge is taking a pretty big risk, because I think Markelle Fultz is the best point guard prospect to come into the league since Kyrie Irving. I think he's extremely well-rounded. He's a guy who I think can shoot 40% from three. I think he could – I think that he could be a something like a 50-40-90 guy if everything goes well. He's a guy who could score at all three levels. He's 6'4", 6'5". He can handle the pick and roll. He can move without the ball and score. I mean, he's just very, very effortless and well-rounded offensively, and I think that that's a heck of a thing to give up if you're the Boston Celtics.
So what does this do for the Gordon Hayward to Boston speculation in your mind?
Well, I don't think it does much. I mean, I think no matter what happens between now and July 1st, there's going to be a max offer waiting for Gordon Hayward from the Boston Celtics, and there's going to be max offer waiting for Gordon Hayward from the Utah Jazz and from the Miami Heat. And, you know, I can envision somebody else maybe jumping in and trying to make some inroads there. You know, I think a lot of this stuff right now is just – it's all posturing and pandering. But, you know, when you get to the bare bones, the Celtics won Hayward, the Jazz won Hayward, and both of those teams are very good teams with very well-run front offices. And I think it's going to go beyond basketball with Gordon Hayward. I think it's going to go his decision, you know, because he can't make a wrong decision, in my opinion, between the Celtics or the Jazz, basketball-wise. So I think it's going to go beyond basketball.
All right, so this is Markelle Fultz, and this is where your mock draft starts to go off the rails a little bit. Pick two. You're letting Lonzo Ball slip past the Lakers? This is destiny, man.
Well, should I go ahead and make some declaration? I mean, should I go ahead and I updated the mock draft last night. It does not look as crazy as the first mock draft. Lonzo Ball is going to the Los Angeles Lakers in the new updated Tribune mock draft. Now, where the guy that I have falling in the updated mock draft is actually Josh Jackson, because I have the Celtics taking Jason Tatum. So, I put the drugs away, and I routed Lonzo to the Los Angeles Lakers, where he's probably going to go, and we're going to go from there.
Well, what I would say, because, you know, a lot of the last Pac-12 season was looking at Lonzo and Markel. People kind of understood they would probably both be lottery picks. And, you know, theoretically both point guards, but really what I see about Markel is sort of a conventional NBA skill set where you say, okay, I see how this translates. You know, he seems like a safe pick because he can do a lot of the things that NBA players do, and he does it in this very conventional way. And Lonzo is different in that I think it's going to take some organizational commitment to kind of play the way that Lonzo plays. And you saw UCLA do that, sort of completely buy in to Lonzo's style and do high tempo and do ball sharing. And I really think the atmosphere he helped create at UCLA is maybe representative of what he can do for an NBA team, but it's really going to take kind of coaching commitment and organizational commitment, especially if it's the Lakers who draft him. I mean, you know, you kind of have to say, okay, to an extent, we're going to let this guy do what he does, because a lot of the things he does doesn't look like, you know, he shoots weird. He probably overpasses to a point, but the way he can improve a team is just sort of by bringing this unselfish style that really you need to maybe gamble a little bit more if you're an organization.
Well, the problem with Lonzo is that you need a good fit with him. And if, you know, so you can't – that's why Philly has no use for him, because you can't play him with a ball-dominant wing like Ben Simmons, because, you know, both of those guys need the ball to be effective. And, you know, so the question with Lonzo is, you know, should the Lakers take him? Does he fit well with D'Angelo Russell, who needs the ball to be effective? Does he fit well with Brandon Ingram, who, you know, needs the ball a little less to be effective than Russell does, but Russell needs the ball to be effective, and Russell's a point guard by trade. You know, so the thing with Lonzo is he's got to go to a system where he's going to be the guy, where he's going to be able to run the offense, where he's going to be able to orchestrate everything. Otherwise, he becomes less effective just by trade.
So. Well, sounds like the Lakers are dangling D'Angelo Russell, hoping to get, everybody says, top 12 pick, which to me would indicate Lonzo Ball's their guy at two,
right.
Even more so. Just on Twitter today, Spence Checkitz over at 1280 suggests Jazz trying to move up into the lottery. I would assume that everyone's trying to move up into the lottery and at least gauging that interest. What do you think the Jazz would have to give up to even make that move? And is there anybody in, let's say it's, you know, 8-7-8 or below that you would want to make that move for?
I don't see them having the assets to do that. And the only asset I think that could get that done is Rodney Hood. And if I were the Jazz, I would not be trading Rodney Hood right now, because you don't know where Gordon Hayward's going to be in 2 to 3 weeks. So I'd be very hesitant with that. I don't think Dante Exum can get you from 24 all the way to 12 or 14, wherever the lottery cuts off. I don't think Derek Favors can get you all the way. I think a healthy Derek Favors could get you 10 spots if you package him with a couple of picks. But he hasn't been healthy. So I just don't know if the Jazz have the assets to be able to pull off that kind of a jump, especially with their first selection being at 24.
Yeah, and the other thing, when Aaron, we were talking about this off air, is, you know, I think we all agree that whatever the Jazz, if the Jazz were to try and move up into the lottery, we're probably talking in the 10 to 14 range rather than the 10 to 5 range, right? I mean, we're talking probably a little bit further back. And, I mean, that's sort of where you hit the Zach Collins, Donovan Mitchell, Luke Kennard, John Collins, and Frank from France.
Nailed it. Nailed it.
Yeah, but... And one thing you have to ask yourself is, are any of those guys definitely better than Rodney Hood now? Who I mean, for maybe Rodney didn't have the season he wanted last year, but for better or worse, he's definitely a rotation NBA player and potentially a starter. So, I mean, are you so sure about any one of those guys that you're like, yeah, we need to trade up to be able to get that guy? Because Those are kind of the orbit guys we're talking about when we talk about the Jazz trading up to get in the lottery.
Yeah, I think obviously the Gordon Hayward, you know, just not knowing where he's going to be is huge. One thing about Rodney Hood situation is obviously he's about coming up on a payday. If you have questions or concerns or you think he's going to command more than you're willing to give, maybe now is a decent time to consider that. Now, notwithstanding, you know, your uncertainty surrounding Gordon Hayward, but
yeah, a little bit on that. I've been told that Ronnie's gonna want, you know, $15 to $18 million.
Me too.
A year. Yeah. So that's so let's say that's 4 years. So we're talking 4 years, $76 million as an extension. If the Jazz are gonna commit to that, they have to know that he's gonna be good and healthy. Because I think personally that Rodney's worth that if he's healthy, if he's consistent. But he's got to stay healthy. I mean, he's missed parts of all 3 years of his NBA career with injuries. So this is a big year for him. The question will be, you know, whether the Jazz can come to an extension before the season with Rodney, or are they going to let him go out and kind of go out and get his contract. And the problem with that is, if he has a great year, he might come back with a $100 million offer sheet. And so I think both sides, I think Rodney's side and I think the Jazz, I think both of those sides, I think they're kind of treading on ice and trying to, and it's a pretty thin poker game there.
So the Jazz, let's say they don't make any move up into the lottery, which is probably the case. It's all hard to make that move. 24, 30, 42, 55 seems unlikely that they would use four picks this year, you know, unless it's some draft and stash kind of stuff in the second round.
Which is why I like Isaiah Hartenstein.
Which you have the Jazz taking in your first mock draft. Do you still see that as a possibility, or what do you see at 24?
I do.
Let's say they stay put.
I do see it as a possibility. I also see Tony Bradley as a real possibility from North Carolina. He was very impressive in his workout with the Jazz. You know, Hartenstein is somebody who's he's young, he's athletic, he's a power forward, he's 7 foot, he can shoot it, he can handle it. He's got some maturity issues. He's got some weight and strength issues, but he's a guy that you can draft him right now and you can stash him over in Germany for a year or maybe two. And that's a good use of your first round pick. And let's say you want Tony Bradley to come in and be a definitive backup to Rudy Gobert. You can do that, and then you can potentially find somebody really good at 42 as well, because I think that this draft is deep enough that somebody is going to be on the board at 42. So, you know, that's one way you could go, or the Jazz can, let's say Donovan Mitchell, who the Jazz really, really, really like. Let's say Donovan Mitchell falls. Let's say he's on the board at 17. You call, you know, or let's say he's on the board at 18. You call the Indiana Pacers and you say, I'll give you 24 and 30, and I'll give you a future second or whatever, and you get additional assets. You give us 18. We move up to take Donovan Mitchell. I think that's a possibility as well.
Yeah, at 30 you have Sedarius Thornwell.
I don't have him at 30 anymore.
Anymore. I was going to say, you, there's not enough Latvian flavor in your first round, no Biseknics.
I have Biseknik going to the Portland Trailblazers now.
Okay. Let's just say, I mean, is there a need of a positional need that you would, if you're the Jazz, I mean, the best player available.
Here are the positional needs. They have to figure out their point guard spot. They have to either have a point guard in place by next Friday, or they have to know that George Hill is 100% coming back. And I can tell you right now, at this point, they don't know that George Hill is 100% coming back. So they have to have, you know, they have 10 days to take care of that point guard position. And I don't think a draft pick is going to suffice for the guy that they're trying to keep. So they have to either do that, and they have to figure out a way to get another big in here, because I think, you know, I think they need a viable backup to Rudy Gobert, especially with, you know, Boris Diaw's situation kind of cloudy.
You have
especially,
to assume Boris is gone at this
right,
point.
You have to assume Boris is gone. You have to assume that Derek Favors is on the block, on the trading block. His camp assumes the same thing. I think Derek assumes the same thing because, you know, on his social media and his Twitter, he's erased all Jazz-related content. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of uncertainty in your front court beyond Rudy Gobert that you have to kind of address. So I think that those are two needs.
I guess you say point guard, and they could have a pretty good idea maybe of Teodosic, but I'm not sure that's enough. You know, I like him. I know you.
Is he an NBA starter? And I love him. Is he an NBA starter? Given the way he defends, like I defend in a pickup game.
But I could go back through your tweets and find definitive takes that he is an NBA starter. You know I'm right.
You know, if Andy Larson were here right now, he'd be singing it to the rafters.
So let's move on to just look some of the local guys really quick here. Kuzma.
We got six local guys that we're looking at. We're looking at Kyle Kuzma. We're looking at Caleb Swanigan. We're looking at Jeremy Sengun. We're looking at Eric Meeker. We're looking at Jalen Moore. And we're looking, are we forgetting one? Or is that it? And we're looking at Frank Jackson, of course. So we're looking at six local guys. Three of them are locked to get drafted The other three, even if they don't get drafted, I think that they're for sure going to be on a summer league team. And I think Eric has a real chance to be one of those two-way contract guys. So it's going to be a busy year for local guys as well.
Ku's at number 20, huh?
Not anymore.
I am
told that Kyle Kuzma has a promise early in the second round before the 35th pick.
Okay. But when you were doing that first mock draft, Tony, let me ask you, what made you think Kyle could go as high as 20?
Because the Portland Trailblazers really, really like him, and they need a playmaking power forward. He had a really, really good workout there. And the fit makes sense. And I honestly think Kuzma's one of the top 30 to 35 guys in his draft.
It'll be really interesting because, I heard Walt Perrin say the other day, I think he's shown teams that he can do more than he did in college. And I think it's been interesting to hear a little bit from NBA teams about his range. Obviously, he did really well at the draft combine, showing that he could hit threes consistently, at least in that five-on-five setting. He's probably a better passer than he was given credit for in college, and a really versatile scorer, obviously a good rebounder and sort of energetic on the board. So it'll be interesting. I think teams maybe still have a little bit of a question of how well he can defend, how mobile he's going to be, especially if he has to guard a three type player or a smaller stretch four. But it's really been interesting to see him kind of go through this process I thought he was a pretty good college player, and teams seem to be saying, oh yeah, he's going to be better in NBA than he was in college.
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to be better in the NBA than in college, because the NBA has spacing that's more conducive to his game than college is. I think that his range, from what I'm being told, is somewhere between 22 and 36. So I think that somebody like, the San Antonio Spurs may draft him at the end of the first round, or maybe the Lakers. I think with that 28th pick, I think he'd be a candidate there. I did move him out of the first round.
In the mock 2.0,
but I would not be surprised if he snuck into the first round.
So another guy, one of the things that mock draft experts love to do for the Jazz is, one, give them white guys, two,
big white guys,
and then I think a local tie. And so you see a lot of Frank Jackson at, I've seen him both at 24 and 30 for the Jazz. Do you see a possible fit there? Is there a possible match?
I think Frank is a definite fit, because I think Frank offers the Jazz something that they don't have, which is a real dose of high-end athleticism at that guard spot. And I know Dante Exum has that, but Frank's a real athlete, and he's very, very explosive off the dribble. He's a guy that wants to be in Utah. I mean, I've been, talking to his camp off and on for the last month, and they definitely want to be with the Jazz. Now, the question is whether the Jazz would take a chance on him at 30, or whether they try to gamble and wait and see if he's available at 42 in light of the fact that he has surgery on his foot. He's expected to be ready for training camp, but I don't expect him to play in summer league. So it'll be interesting to see, how valued he is, because he's very young, he's very athletic, and he needs to learn how to play the game a lot. But I think that he's a guy that the Jazz could draft, and he could help the Jazz.
Yeah, and that was kind of a point I wanted to piggyback on, because everyone I've talked to about Frank says, this is an investment. This is not a guy who's ready to play tomorrow. He's not a guy who's going to be helping you off the bench necessarily in his first year. I think he might be at least a year in the G League, and then you kind of hope that he develops from there. And Tony kind of hit on it a little bit. I think people kind of see his basketball IQ and sort of his ability to kind of process and figure out, first of all, what position he is, because some people see him as a shooting guard. I think he might see himself as a point guard, but he's not necessarily at a level where he can play point guard in the NBA at this time. So I think it's going to take investment from any team that drafts him. I think he will get drafted. I agree with Tony on that point. But if you're the Jazz, you have to ask yourself, do we want a point guard that potentially a point guard that we can kind of take, and he's going to have all these athletic gifts and this ability, but he's going to take maybe a year, maybe two, to kind of learn what position he is and how to play the game at this level.
Gatorade appreciates your branding and use of G League.
G League, because I almost said D League.
You can call it the D League still. That's fine. You don't work for Gatorade. So we started off just before we pressed record with Tony losing his mind over a fake Woj tweet talking about a Paul George to the Lakers deal. Right now, everybody's running that trade machine. It's most of the bandwidth that isn't, you know, pornography probably. It's just people going through doing three-way trades to get Kevin Love out of Cleveland or Paul George out of Indianapolis. Exactly. And so I wonder, I mean, do you see the Jazz trying to get involved in one of these type blockbuster types? I mean, obviously pie in the sky kind of long shot stuff for everybody here, but is that something you would entertain?
Well, the pie in the sky greatest best case scenario is the Jazz figuring out a way to pry Goran Dragic from the Miami Heat, and that's not happening.
That is your best case scenario.
That's the best case scenario because of the $13 million that they have.
Dream big,
and cap space.
Big.
So look, I'm saying best case scenario that's realistic. Paul George is not realistic. Neither is Jimmy Butler. Okay, so you know, I think you look at somebody like Goran Dragic, or if the Phoenix Suns, if they draft De'Aaron Fox, then you look at somebody like Eric Bledsoe, who I think can be had pretty easily. Maybe you absorb Patrick Beverley. He's on the block. You can get him for cheap, but do you really want him as your starting point guard for 82 games? Or you look at Jrue Holiday in unrestricted free agency. And obviously, we have Teodosic. Whatever the Jazz do, man, they got to have that point guard spot solidified by next Friday. And they have to have some answers for Gordon Hayward, because if they don't, that to me is what gives Gordon the out to say, hey, I'm going to Boston.
Yeah, when I kind of think about some of these scenarios, and obviously everyone's really into trade talk, and I think fans want to be a part of it and be involved in it. They like to kind of see blockbuster trades come down. But in that meeting, we were all in with Dennis Lindsay. What he was talking about primarily was retention. And I mean, obviously, if you're the Jazz, you have to kind of get more on solid footing with George Hill and Gordon Hayward to make sure they're going to be there. But I have a hard time seeing necessarily that you're going to have an easier time keeping those guys there and selling them if you're going to, you know, trade away, you know, three pieces of last year's team, for example. I mean, if we're talking about Rodney Hood and Derek and some of those other guys on the block, I don't know for Dennis Lindsay if that makes a better sell for your star free agents to kind of keep them in house. He told us during that meeting that the number one thing for the organization this year was retention. And to me, I mean, you know, I'm sure the Jazz are listening. I'm sure they're taking calls about blockbusters and mega deals, but I don't know if they're feeling a strong itch to make a move on some of those things that are really going to blow up the team and blow up what they felt was a really strong culture from last year.
I know what your answer is going to be, but I just want to. I want it on record. If there's a deal for Kevin Love available for the Utah Jazz, would you do
it?
You're crazy.
I'm not doing a deal for Kevin Love.
You're crazy. Kevin Love, nobody.
You can call me crazy, but you can't defend with him on the floor.
He defended Steph Curry and won an NBA title.
Steph Curry decided that he wanted to force a three-point shot no matter what, instead of taking the easy two. And if he had taken the easy two, the Warriors may have still won that game.
Don't you have to say you're really discounting the paddleboarding factor that Kevin Love brings to the team? He's really going to bring a huge paddleboarding presence to Jordan-L Reservoir.
I like Kevin Love like I like Al Jefferson, man. It's 20 and 10 of nothing.
Is
that a hot take?
Yeah, come on. You just compared Kevin Love to Al Jefferson.
20 and 10. Defense on the other end, all you got to do is put him in pick and roll. That's all you got to do. If you're the Jazz.
With Rudy Gobert behind him?
Even with Rudy Gobert behind him. You would need three Rudy Goberts to make up for Kevin Love.
So if the Jazz trade for Kevin Love, are they still a playoff team next year? Let's say.
Absolutely.
Okay. So then we're talking about is matchups in the playoffs that really.
Yes, and then Golden State sweeps you again because
okay,
you can't.
Who currently guards Kevin Durant?
Right now?
Yeah.
Gordon Hayward.
Okay. So they switch.
What do the Jazz do more than anything defensively? They switch, which is why Quinn Snyder loved Joe Johnson at the four, which is why Quinn Snyder loved playing Joe Ingles and Gordon Hayward and Rodney Hood together. So you can switch like-minded, so you can switch everything, right?
Yeah, I think they would give this more consideration than you think they would.
What does it cost? Let's have that conversation. I'm willing to be flexible.
It probably costs you Derek Favors.
Okay, I can deal with that.
Picks.
How many picks? Like all of your picks?
Not all of your picks.
One, you get one first rounder.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland, you get one first.
I mean, this is a three-team deal somewhere.
Okay.
And I mean, it might cost you Dante Exum.
That's tough, man. That's tough.
I think it's something they would really, really consider.
Okay, Dante, Derek, and a first round. Okay, I'll do it.
Tony really sticking to his guns hardcore.
All right.
From no to okay.
One more rumor. The Andre Iguodala, there's some talk that he's considering the Jazz. What do you think about that?
Hogwash.
Hogwash.
You have to agree with me on that one.
Yeah, I mean, the money that he wants. I mean, if he leaves the Warriors, it's for a big payday, and I would.
Well, here's the thing with Andre Iguodala, and this is why he doesn't make sense for the Jazz, because the only way he makes sense for the Jazz is if Gordon Hayward is here and he can be your sixth man, because right now he's no longer a high-level NBA starter. You can plug him in your starting lineup for 82 games, but he'll be mush by game 82 because of the minutes that he'd have to play. So if he only makes sense if he's coming off the bench as one of the best six men in the league, in my opinion, the best six man in the league, then that means you have to have Gordon Hayward on your team. And if you have Gordon Hayward on your team, you can't afford Andre Iguodala. And the only way you're going to be able to afford Andre Iguodala is if Gordon Hayward's not on your team, which means Andre Iguodala is a moot point.
Fair enough. It's been a few weeks. I mean, obviously – talking about, there are a million things that would go into Gordon Hayward's decision that have yet to be decided. Are you hearing, seeing, feeling anything that, you know, that would you have an idea that he's leaning or anything like that at this point?
I'm hearing that he is genuinely torn, and that right now his odds of staying are 50-50. That's not great odds for the Jazz. But I think if he knows that the point guard situation is solidified, I think those odds go up.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I just don't see – I don't see a better situation drastically for him either way.
In a basketball sense, right.
You know, I think it's impossible for probably any team that he's on right now to get through the Warriors in the West or to get through LeBron in the East. For the time being. So That's why I think one and one for Gordon probably makes the most sense still. I mean, it has.
Which is why if you're the Jazz, you try to cash your chips into the table and say, hey, can you please give me Jimmy Butler or Paul George? And I know I just said, you know, it's unrealistic, but, I mean, that's what you do. If you know Gordon is coming back for a 1-1, you try to make that one really count.
Could be the last you got.
But you can't mortgage the future, so you can't throw all of your draft picks in the middle of the table.
Okay. Well, we'll be back on try to do this Monday to look at post draft stuff
and
free agency a little bit closer. But I wanted to get Tony on record saying where he bought his drugs and
this is going
for those who don't know, we mentioned Kyle, but Kyle and Tony are going to be the primary Jazz writers next year. Kyle, you mean you want to introduce yourself? If you want to say anything?
Good riddance.
So who?
Oh, Tony, it's a beautiful friendship.
You know, my mom really likes you. Like, she really, really, really likes you. You know, if you get the seal of approval from mom, I mean, it's
well. This is a whole separate podcast, Tony.
We'll do moms next week. All right, bye, guys. We'll be right back.